Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
nebulum and vibranium. These are two elements. Yes, they are, well, they're not real elements, but there have been elements are very real for certain people at certain times, and the odds are that you probably haven't heard of them, and the odds are again that you probably will never hear of them. So let's listen to this in this episode about the periodic table. And if I'm actually talking about elements that never have and never will exist, you probably correctly identified me as a periodic table tragic. Now, nebulum, I'll just tell you what they are before you go too far, because you don't want to be sucked in like as I do in some of these podcasts where you're going, oh, maybe not. Oh, no, I'm disappointed. I'm not that sort of way. Like scientific articles you read where they put something forward and then they say, no, it's complete rubbish and stuff like that. I'm going to tell you first up it's complete rubbish, but still worthwhile listening to because it's an insight into complete rubbish. So nebulum was seen in the nebula. And this is when a star blows up in space. It scatters itself into the galactic void or galactic atmosphere, and neutron star or white dwarfs pumping out heaps of energy inside, illuminating the gas, and the illuminated gas showed an element called nebulum. A few years before, they discovered helium in the sun. This is by looking at the sun directly, they found a new element. But they're looking at a nebulous, and a nebula, they found these new lines there. So what happens is the light goes through telescope, rather than going into the eyepiece, it goes firstly into a prism, and you get a series of stars. The star is actually spread across as a rainbow, and the different colours of light, characteristic to the different harmonics or different vibrations of an atom. So each atom has got a different spectrum, and by looking at the spectrum of this gas which is in the sun, what gas is that? Well, it's the sun gas, helos, the gas of the sun. And then a little while later we discovered it on Earth and it all was fine. Sort of the same thing goes across. Looking up there, what's that? It corresponds to nothing we know of. Let's call it nebulum. And so for many years people thought of what nebulum is. Now, so in the end of this you're going to hear a little bit about the structure of the periodic table, who I am, and structures like that, and then other things. Now, a good listener would know, well, two things. You can hear the weird birds next to me, but a good listener will know that there's two elements I talk about, nebulum and vibranium. Now, again, it's a tragic, so when an element really gets a life of its own, but it's weird and it goes different ways. Vibranium is actually much more alive today. It's alive in the hearts and minds of all the kids who read, I suppose, Marvel comics. Because vibranium is that extra special element necessary to make the comic heroes come to life. And particularly the Black Panther uses vibranium suits, which has these various things that allows them to climb up, walk on water, do all these sorts of things. Very strong metals. It's got different, it's got a series of properties which, by reading the Marvel's comics and looking at history, you can actually work things out. And also, Iron Man, who had a palladium arc reactor in his, above his heart to keep the metal from penetrating his heart, an Iron Man, that powered his suit. It was originally a palladium, but as in Stark Industries, I think it is, it gets upgraded. He goes from palladium to vibranium. Now, palladium is a real element. It's one of the elements named after celestial bodies. Let's go through the elements. You've got helium. You've got uranium, Uranus, neptunium, Neptune, plutonium, Pluto. Pluto's not a planet, but it doesn't really matter because you've got cerium, which is in the lanthanide. It goes lanthanum, cerium, praseodymium, neodymium, promethium, samarium, europium, gadolinium. Really, I'm suffering trying to work out what happens next. Terbium. There's erbium and yttrium. There's holmium in there, and dystopian or something like that. So really, really going into it. However, getting back to it, we're going through elements which are bodies in space. There's Ceres, named after the planet, the microplanet, dwarf planet, which is sitting in the asteroid belt. Should be as famous as Pluto. I don't know why not. But it's just one of these things which is just a PR nightmare. And Palladius, which I really don't know, again, and from Greek mythology. And of course, the Earth, Tellurium, and Selenium, the Moon. All bodies out there in the periodic table. So Palladium was picked up, and so they've got another element in there, which is Vibranium. Now, people who like to think of Superman, there's kryptonite. How that actually is, whether that's an element or a compound of krypton, it's still very hard to know. But these are elements that you'd like to get to know. Now, before I sort of get into it in a little bit deeper as to what the actual elements are, vibranium is sort of in the minds of American cartoon drawers, so there's not much you can say about it. Nebulum is actually a real thing. It's a real thing which looks just like an element. So what the heck is going on there? So let's get into it. But what I want to talk about is about the periodic table itself. So the periodic table is the first thing you say is everyone knows about it. But sort of the origin of, it's got a sort of magic about it, because it's indeed got a magical origin. So there wasn't a great distinction between alchemists, people who are trying to make gold with magic, and full-on magicians. In fact, the entire magical cult and the relationship with the church and the dark magic and symbols and stuff like that, tarot cards, that whole sort of Victorian smoking room sort of spookiness, the classic haunted house view of the periodic table. So all the elements and associated with the gods, with special wealth and all these symbols came across. So it's got a historic point, and it was put together by, eventually by Mendeleev. Now the interesting thing is that Mendeleev's periodic table is rotated 90 degrees to our current periodic table. He had them in lists, and people were looking at the way things repeated, and they were actually seeing, pulling out of the mists, the repeating sequences in the periodic table, and they were repeats from quantum mechanical symmetry as it comes across, going on the, it basically is octaves going through, but it's a bit more complicated than that. Then it comes along, and of course people sort of like the historical story and think, oh, but there's more. So there's a basic symmetry of things going down a group in the periodic table. So that's going to be what groups and periods. There's 7 periods of the periodic table, and a period is a row. So the first row has hydrogen, helium. The next row has lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, neon. Next row after that has, the third row has sodium, magnesium, aluminium, silicon, phosphorus, sulfur, chlorine, argon. And then after that, we get into the next row, the fourth period, which is potassium, calcium, scandium, titanium, vanadium, I got to get this right, chromium, manganese, I think I've got that, that's right, chromium, manganese, and then iron, cobalt, nickel, copper, zinc going across. That's the fourth period. And you can keep on going across. I could go across further. Gallium, under nitrogen, we've done phosphorus, have we? I can't really remember doing the oxygen phosphorus bit. There you go. My brain's burning out. I'll have to get on top of that one. Properly, I haven't said that all correctly. But you've got the periods and the groups that are going down. And traditionally, we used to have 1 to 8 in Roman numerals. Now we have 1 to 18 groups going down. These are the columns of the periodic table. And in a group, things are very similar. So in the nitrogen group, this is the picture. Nitrogens, got a silent P. Nitrogens. It's got nitrogen, phosphorus, arsenic, antimony, bismuth, I suppose. Lead's under, bismuth, yeah. Under the lead one, which is group 14, is carbon, silicon, germanium, tin, lead. They're all very, I've got similar chemical characteristics. So you had the periodicity putting them together. Now the general idea of the periodic table is that if you read the story of how they just got there, it's sort of like Murder, She Wrote, where the clues come at the end and you can see how the plot fits together in different ways. You could have approached it a different way. Another different way is that the periodic table is repeated again and again. A periodic table is actually a conglomeration of four tables, the S, D, P, and F block. They're four little tables where they actually repeat themselves again. And so if you look for something called electron affinity or magnetic properties, you'll see the overall pattern is actually a pattern of a composite table. So people see the table as whole, or you can see it's the table as a conglomeration of four tables put on each other. Now, the periodic table sort of came as a cultural jigsaw puzzle once it was put together. So Mendeleev used to play cards, played solitaire, and solitaire means the cards get put down in a particular order, suits and processes like that. You'd actually get the various suits putting it up together, and the link between the periodic table of elements and a cultural game of cards came together, and this cultural idea of looking for different elements. And of course, seeing things by spectral colour is one way that elements were found and isolated. A lot of elements were found because they couldn't be concentrated, but they could be concentrated a little bit and their spectrums would change a little bit. So you'd draw one spectrum. This is a spectrum, is the actual intensity at different colours is the name of the spectrum. Spectrum comes from word for spectre, ghosts. In fact, the colours given off by elements are the ghost or the soul of the element by looking at it. Across there, that's what spectra means, the soul or ghost of the element. Spectroscopy. But there's many, many elements in which they got the clue that were on the right path by looking at the actual fingerprint. So it's like a barcode. An element has a barcode, if you like, similar to scanning at Outlook, and the barcode element. And so if you see that there, so there's a series of elements, and I'm doing this to pick up time and also to do memory. So you've got helium was found that way. There's terbium, which is thulium. It's the one under the boron list. It's one before lead. It's thulium. I can't pronounce it. It's not thulium, I think is wrong. But that's for the Greek of yellowy. It's sort of greeny, grassy yellow. That's thulium. I can't pronounce it properly. You'll have to pick it up on your periodic table. You've got cesium, which is the Latin for that particular shade of bluey reddish colour. that you have when you strike in a flame. There should have been one for strontium. That was picked up a flame, put it out in a flame. It must be strontium. Strontium is actually not named after the colour, because it's the colour of the spectrum. Even though it was detected there, or barium, because strontium was named after Strontian, a Scottish fishing village, which means fairy's nose. So fairy's nose got into the periodic table. You've got other ones. You've got indium on the other side, rubidium for rose colour, indium for indigo colour. Then you've got the actual elements themselves, like are coloured visually. So they absorb and reflect the light without being thrown into a flame. And that would be like chlorine, which means the green element, iodine, which means the indigo element, and then you've got a whole series of elements going through. So there was a long, strong tradition of chucking something in the flame, seeing it's got lines, and therefore if it's got individual lines and it can be tweaked in a certain way, it's a dead giveaway. It's sort of like fingerprints on a gun. You can sort of start lifting off fingerprints, but after you get more than 10 fingerprints, you know, there's only 10 fingers, or fingers and thumbs, that there must be another person involved, and you can actually work this out. So that's the way that they track down a lot of elements early on, when they're very hard to extract. Now, why are they hard to extract? Well, not because they're necessarily rare, but because they're so chemically like the other one. So the chemical periodic table, which is a celebration of difference, actually has an awful lot of elements which are chemically annoyingly the same. Extremely difficult one. There's a few elements I can't remember, being bloody hard to separate. Just hard work. I've got to remember what they are. That's out of my head. Going up, I just trying to really think. I think what those elements are, gone from my head. I'll have to revise and get on top of it. So the bottom line is that this person pointed his telescope at a nebulum and got what is a dinky die new element, and it's never been found. And stayed around, and people were looking for nebulum. How do you make them? Well, it's not that there is a thing called a metastable atom. A metastable iron atom, it could easily be. That is, the entire way that spectrum is produced is that an electron gets promoted to a higher orbital. Now, in the old monies, the old days, it would be that you draw electrons travelling in racetracks around a nucleus, a little nucleus, and there'd be really small electrons and go in circles, and you'd have a circle at a certain distance from the Earth, from the nucleus. So there'd be like ring roads. You're going around a city, you can go around the CBD, you can go around the urban one, and then you can go for a big country drive around the outside. And what happens in the Bohr's postulates, which just are insanely stupid, they say the electron jumps from one orbital to another. So it jumps from the CBD to the inner ring road, or the inner ring road above. And eventually the electrons will settle down. And the long and short of it is that this metastable one was that the electron was stored for a long time in a very high orbital. And it could, in a high orbital, which is a metastable oxygen, meant that, I've given away that's what it was. It was a metastable oxygen. It meant that the electron couldn't jump to the inner ring road because it just didn't have the correct shape. And of course, electron not having the correct, too hard. Let's not teach it. Let's not mention it to anybody. Let's just pretend it wasn't there. But we're not actually going to do that. We're going to, do it's there. Well, let's deal with it that electrons, if you wanted to do a bit like dough, a bit like fluffy, light dough. Dough's dough is very heavy. So I think the word for mass comes from dough. So dough's a bad thing because it conjures up the idea of weight, and electrons are completely light and fluffy. But they've got a shape, and the basic shape is a little ball shape. So you can imagine an electron in your hand. It doesn't have an edge or surface, but it's got this lovely shape. It comes in, it goes from non-existent into existence and out. Very beautifully glides through it. And you can just put your hand through it, if you are imagining it. It just sits there on your hand, just floating up there. And what you can do is you can grab that electron and do a twist in it. And the electron now has sort of like this twist. You can see right through to the recenter. That's a P or stuff like that. And so with the oxygen, oxygen is sort of famous, the most metastable-ish molecule or atom. It's sort of lots of fun metastable states in there. I'll just work out why that's so. I don't really think it right. So, but there is metastable states of oxygen, which then get built in space due to absorption of radiation. And from that metastable state, it means metastable, it can't decay to the ground state. So it looks like a completely new atom. It's actually O star. Maybe an oxygen ion. And the issue is that oxygen ions, anything which is an ion, has got just a hell of a way for the electrons really held strongly across, and there's lines of few and far between. This nebulum was in actual fact metastable oxygen. So in the thin, rarefied gas of space, the oxygen will sit out there having hundreds of meters, if not kilometers, between any other atoms that will go across, and then it's excited, undergoes no collision, so it sits there in space, excited, and in a nebula. So your ground state oxygen absorbs, gets converted to metastable oxygen. This metastable oxygen then interacts with the radiation and starts to go up from an excited state, from its metastable state, and down again, keeping on going down like that, emitting radiation and going for millions of years or thousands of years through space into someone's spectrometer, into actual lines, and looking at a whole new atom. But in this case, it is a whole new atom, but it's just a standard atom, which is the excited space. So I suppose there, in terms of periodic table, it's allowed me to talk about the periodic table again. But in this entire view that there's a methodology of finding a new element, but if you can apply that methodology and you can find what you think should be a new element, but it's actually some new area of science to come across. And this is, I suppose, one of the laws that when people read the methodology of what was used in the periodic table and the limits, they limit themselves on several thoughts. They limit themselves in how they describe the periodic table to the historic story, because you can't say or exhaust people explaining it up to a point. You can't therefore go across to the next stage and explain what's going on. So there's that limit in terms of your explanation, and then when you recreate it and you go through the same process of discovery, you expect to discover the same sort of thing. And of course that didn't happen with nebulum. It's a perfectly reasonable thing to happen. Now vibranium is the sort of same story of the use of the periodic table as a source of explanation and fantasy, a bedrock of understanding. People say, well, it's in the periodic table. That's it. That's all I need to know. That's all I've been taught at school. And that is true for vibranium. But vibranium is something very interesting to think about in terms of what it says culturally about our relationships to the periodic table in the Marvel world, in terms of what this allows me to go. So people will be told there's such and such an element in this food, there's such and such an element in your brace, your plate, So somehow that someone coming in, you fractured your legs and they put a titanium plate in it. Because it's titanium, that's great. I can go, or say at various stages if you're drinking a copper pot, there's poisoning, there's deficiencies, there's all these relationships with the periodic table, yet people's understanding is sort of like a cultural warehouse where people can actually just take out ready-made concepts and use them. And of course, that's what this fantasy world of vibranium in the various characters, Black Panther and Iron Man, are two big users of this in this world. And it's just this basic thought of, I can raid this cupboard of concepts. And it goes very much to the level of education we want to do. We do want to teach people to go deeper. We want to teach people just to be content, like everyone else in society, going and raiding the cupboard. So it's not a clean story in terms of Nibulum and Vibranium, because it's not a clean story, because they actually don't exist, so there's no end story to it. It's just more of the story within the story, the story of what, or this is the inner story of what they were doing, but the outer story of how they were fulfilling their understanding of a greater story. Hope that makes sense. Thanks a lot for listening at 26 minutes. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.